What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode, I want to say two, because that's what we're talking about. Episode 12 of the Massive Breakdown in Real Life podcast. We are so excited to have you guys here tonight. We're going to be talking about something that we have been longing to talk about for months, nay, for years. Episode two of the Star Wars prequels, Attack of the Clones. Last in Real Life podcast episode was The Phantom Menace. This one is Attack of the Clones. I am so excited to talk about it because this is really where, in my opinion, the prequels start getting good. Kit Kutcha, are you ready?
Dude, I'm ready. I've got my standard Skywalker blue milk ready to drink.
Did you milk it yourself? Did you go and
I did. You don't want to see what it came out of.
apparently neither did Star Wars fans because they really hated the movie where Luke Skywalker milked the beast himself, so apparently wasn't as entertaining as people thought it would be. But yeah. So we're not talking about those movies. We're not talking about the sequels, which
But there, I mentioned it only because there was blue milk in this
So
movie.
did you see, this has nothing to do with Blue Milk, I don't know why I'm talking about right now, but did you
Anyway.
see that there is a rumor that they had brought George Lucas on to cut a version of Rise of Skywalker to try to save it at the end. And they ended up not going with it. And this is, of course, a rumor. There's like 100% chance that this is not true. However, I love thinking about this rumor. They cut a Lucas cut of Rise of Skywalker because they were so disappointed with the J.J. Abrams version of it. They showed it at test screenings and it reviewed much better in the test screenings than the J.J. Abrams one, but they were worried what it would look like if they released that instead of the J.J. Abrams one. So they went ahead and released it. Supposedly, now that Kathleen Kennedy is again supposedly leaving, or maybe already did leave. I don't know how much this is true. I just read the gossip rags, right? But the Star Wars gossip rags. But now that Kathleen Kennedy is leaving, there is a movement within Disney to retcon out the sequels and have George Lucas redo the sequels, basically, as his vision of what the sequels should be, right? Which would be the greatest business decision of all time, because you know that every single person who watched those sequels would pay to go watch the sequels again if they were made by George Lucas. 100% of those people would cheer and scream, and you know what would be funny is they would still fucking hate them, just like they hated the prequels.
I'd really like to disagree with anything that you
But
said.
it's impossible because we know Star Wars fans. Because we are Star Wars fans.
The only stuff in there that I can like argue against is the rumors. Everything it, if the rumors are true, everything you said follows
I know,
logically.
but there's no way they are.
I know that I would spend that money, and I know that I would bitch about them later.
So talking about
I mean, what do you want me to
bitching
say?
about Star Wars, this is something I think I mentioned it in the Phantom Menace episode, but when I watched these movies as a kid, so obviously I grew up in the 90s, born in 90, right? So the original Star Wars movies were before my time. However, my dad loved them. And so as a kid, we had the VHSs and I watched the original Star Wars movies a lot. And I always liked them. They were good movies, but I liked them in the same way that I liked the original Indiana Jones movies and the original James Bond movies. I knew that they were movies from before my time, but I thought they were really fun and really entertaining movies and I really enjoyed watching them, right? But when the prequels came out in the early 2000s, I guess 99 in the early 2000s, like those were the movies that I grew up with. Like Pod Racing, Obi-Wan, Anakin, even Jar Jar Binks, like that was the Star Wars universe that I knew. And that was the Star Wars universe that I grew up in. I legitimately did not know that people didn't like the prequels until I grew up and talked about them. And people were like, yeah, those were so shit. And I was like, really? Because as like a 9 and 10 year old, I remember fucking loving those movies, right? And I think that is what has happened with this generation, the sequels too. I having being part of a family where I am the youngest of all the cousins, all of my other cousins have kids who are, between the ages of like 9 and 15 right now, or even younger. Some of them are younger, but like to them, Rey and Poe and Finn are like, that is their Star Wars, right? Like, that's the Star Wars they're growing up on. And that's the Star Wars they love. And like they quote stuff from those movies, right? And they don't realize that people didn't like those movies either, right? And it comes down to a thing that George Lucas said way back in the day, like Star Wars is first and foremost, it's for kids. Like it is for kids, but you want to make a movie that adults can enjoy too, right? But it makes me question whether if the original movies had come out, you know, for a different generation, whether the preceding generation would have shit all over them like they're doing, right? Because it was like the original generation hated the prequels, and then the prequels generation hated the sequels, right? But the generation that grew up for those movies loves those movies. Or at least that's kind of the way I feel about it. I obviously don't hate the sequels. I don't think they were as good as they could have been, but I find them to be really enjoyable movies, and I don't really have a problem with them. But the prequels, I have like a special love in my heart for them because of the age I watched them at. It's like when you play that first video game that like really hooks you, and then you grow up and you're like always trying to chase that same video game feeling, but it's hard to get because you played it at a certain point in time in your life that was really, really formative for you. That's kind of how I feel about the prequels. And in particular, that's kind of how I feel about Attack of the Clones.
Okay, so that was, I mean, that's a lot to process. So I want to say this. When the prequel movies came out, I had grown up watching Star Wars movies and loving them. I mean, like, let's not beat around the bush. Both my parents were nerds. They passed that legacy on to me quite successfully. Like, you know, like, we literally, before we owned them, we had recorded them while they were being aired on television onto VHS, and those were the versions we watched until we bought a box set. So we were all up on it, you know, in 1990, 1991, 1992. We were all about it. I literally got in trouble for watching Return of the Jedi at a babysitter's house because of Princess Leia's costume. She found it distasteful, and I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I've seen this movie like six times.
Wait until you see Titanic. Like,
yeah, right. So, like, I was all about it, and I really enjoyed the prequel movies. I found Jar Jar Binks annoying as a character. A lot of my friends really hated Jar Jar specifically, and because of him, shit on the movies, and because I wanted to fit in, I sort of joined in with that. But the truth is, if I'm being honest, I enjoyed the movies. You know, and being a much more emotionally secure adult than I was a child, I mean, Jar Jar is annoying, but like, he's for kids. Kids find him hilarious and adorable.
And
so
he's still fucking iconic, which is what's crazy, right? Like, he may be iconic for now, he may be iconic for the wrong reasons, but he is probably one of the most famous Star Wars characters. Like, he is known the world round, and yeah, you know, you do hate him. Like, I rewatched the movie as an adult, and I was like, wow, Jar Jar is pretty annoying. Like, he is. As a kid, I didn't notice it. I literally didn't notice a single thing about it. I thought he was funny. Like, I thought he was, like, this goofy animal character with big ears. He's kind of ridiculous, but, yeah, as an adult, he's annoying. But, you know, he's part of the Star Wars universe, and he's not as much in the Clone Wars. Not as much in Attack of the Clones. That is one thing. Like, they Rose Tico'd him, and they Jar Jar'd Rose Tico, but they downplayed him significantly in the following two movies. He is much more reserved, despite the fact that he basically gives control of the Senate to Senator Palpatine. As Darth Jar Jar, as we all know, he was the one actually pulling the strings the entire time.
Of course.
I don't know if we're going to have time to talk about that particular fan theory, albeit an interesting one.
I don't think it's worth getting into. I thought it was interesting, you know, so the funny thing about, like, the critical reception of Star Wars as almost a genre unto itself, with, like, a subgenre within science fiction, The original movies, specifically the original Star Wars movie, which was just called Star Wars at the time before, you know, we learned that there were in fact going to be a number of episodes, met with just like almost universal acclaim. And a big part of that was because the special effects were groundbreaking. They did things that no one had done before. They invented ways of doing things. Which is why, Industrial Light and Magic went on to be its own wildly successful company. Like, literally multiple companies were spawned out of Star Wars. There's a reason that George Lucas is phenomenally wealthy, and it's Star Wars. And it's that first movie that literally made his name in history. He will be remembered, for generations. Already has been remembered for generations, will be remembered for many to come. And the difficulty of following something like that cannot possibly be understated, right? Like, when you make one movie that is wildly popularly successful and critically successful, like, what do you do, right? And the fact that he managed to be incredibly successful with all three of those movies is literally, like, it's a feat that entire companies spend hundreds of millions of dollars striving to recreate. And it is very rarely done. So then to try to do it again is either hubris or folly.
Turns out a little bit of both.
Turns out a little bit of both is pretty fair, I think, to say. It was utterly unreasonable to go into these movies and expect them to have necessarily the same impact as the originals, because the originals, we went into them with, at least especially the first one, without an expectation. We didn't know what to expect from these movies. And so they could exceed, anything previous and blow us out of the water. And so these movies, Attack of the Clones, and its compatriots, had a level of expectation placed on them that was just so far beyond what was reasonable to expect them to deliver, that I think it resulted in them getting a lot more vitriol than they deserved. I've rewatched The Phantom Menace a number of times. I've just rewatched Attack of the Clones this week. And honestly, like, they're pretty good movies. If you're going and looking for just like some space fantasy fun, flying around the galaxy, blowing stuff up, having an adventure, like this is an entertaining movie.
So
it's a good time.
The Phantom Menace
and Attack of the Clones is a real good time.
The Phantom Menace is the weakest of the three beginning movies, I think. However, Liam Neeson, Ewan McGregor, incredibly strong. Darth Maul, great in his limited screen time that's available. Pod racing scene, fantastic. It is truly held back slightly by Jar Jar Binks and like his comic relief type thing, and the whole Naboo stuff. But entertaining movie, fair to watch. Attack of the Clones, legitimately very good. If you look at the cast that was in this movie, and you look at the world building that they did in this movie, right? We get to see Coruscant. We get to see like a high city for the first time in Star Wars on screen. I remember like my mind being blown by the idea that like not all Star Wars was these little backwater ports and like desert towns and jungle hideaways, but like there were people living real life, going out to bars and drinking and watching sports, and like there are advertisements and there are roads and there are cars and people have hot rods and apartments. Like, I remember that blowing my mind. But let's look at the cast, right? When we talk about the impact that these movies have on Star Wars, when you think of Obi-Wan, some people think of, Alan McGuinness, but it's Ewan McGregor, right? Samuel L. Jackson, even Hayden Christensen to a certain point, Ian McDiarmid, Christopher Lee, like even
Natalie Portman.
Yeah. Natalie Portman, Jango Fett was Temuera Morrison. Like you think Jimmy Smits is Bail Organa, right? Like you think of the people that it added to the franchise, right? And they're so legendary now. And some of that, it can be argued, is because of like Clone Wars, the TV series, following the movies coming out, adding to the backstory of some of these characters. But like, we look at these characters now and they are iconic. They are part of the Star Wars universe, right? Like, they are what they are with their flaws and their warts and their things that, was Hayden Christensen potentially the best actor to play a young Anakin? No, but at the same time, like, the way he played Anakin is now the way I view Anakin, right? Like, I don't look for like excuses or like, oh, he could have done this or he could have done this. Like, I look at it like that was Anakin. Hayden Christensen was Anakin. Ewan McGregor is Obi-Wan. Samuel L. Jackson, you know, is Mace Windu. Like, all these people are the characters they inhabit. And that's one of the things that I feel like doesn't get enough credit for this. Like, the movie cast incredibly, incredibly well. And the people in the movie play their roles incredibly, incredibly well. I always feel like you can tell when people who are in a movie are, like, enjoying themselves filming a movie, right? Like, I feel like it carries through onto the screen. And I feel like that's something that is true in this movie. I feel like every single person who is in the movie, with the potential exception of Ahmad Best, because his life kind of got fucked up by being Jar Jar Binks. But everyone else, I feel like, really, really enjoyed themselves. Yeah, and that's because fans are shitty, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I think that right there is a reminder to not be a shitty fan. Like, you can dislike a movie, you can dislike a character or the way that an actor portrayed a character, but, like, you know, it's probably best to stop there. If you don't like it, like, maybe just don't spend any money on it, don't waste time thinking about it, move on with your life, let it be not popular, right? Like, that's the best way to punish something. Going out and, like, making somebody's life suck, like, that's not productive.
So, interesting story. Do you know that there were a couple other people who auditioned for the role of Anakin Skywalker, and Lucas auditioned mostly unknown actors. Paul Walker, Colin Hanks, and Leonardo DiCaprio all met with Lucas.
DiCaprio was not available.
Yeah, exactly. He was not available for it, but he did meet with Lucas for the role. But Paul Walker and Colin Hanks, I mean, it would have been a very different movie with any of those things. And it's a testament to Hayden Christensen that I can't imagine any of those guys having played Anakin. Leo, I can, but, you know, that's because it's Leo and he's a fantastic actor and I'm sure he can play any role. You know, Paul Walker, love him in The Fast and the Furious, RIP. Don't know if he would have been a great Anakin Skywalker. Colin Hanks, absolutely not. Would not have been a good Anakin Skywalker, I don't think.
Like, so, and I feel like, I gotta say that I think Mr. Christensen got a lot of crap that honestly probably really should have been directed at the people who wrote his lines and his story arc.
Definitely.
For the movie. Because having just rewatched it, his portrayal, I think, was probably on point for what he was supposed to deliver. It's just that what he was supposed to deliver was, like, a little bit of a yo-yo in terms of, like, now I'm okay, now I'm insanely angry. I love Obi-Wan. I hate Obi-Wan. It's a lot of yo-yoing, and you know, I think he did a good job of portraying the infatuation with Padme. I think that unfortunately they failed to really give, like, any particular motivation for Padme to fall in love with him. Like, that was for me. It was like, what does she see in him? Like, that's never clear to me. He saved her planet as a child. Okay. So she's fond of him. But I didn't ever get, like, a sense of, like, you know, where's the bonding moment that really brings them together? And I think they tried to portray some of that, but it was almost like we got the points where they were, like, already liked each other and were friends, and we kind of skipped the whole part where they become friends and fall in love. And it was like we skipped straight from uncomfortable with each other to in love, and it was very confusing.
That's legitimately how it goes. I feel like there had to have been scenes that were cut. Maybe they weren't filmed, maybe they weren't written, I don't know. I feel like there had to have been scenes, because they're in the ship, and we're skipping ahead because I wanted to talk about the plot from the beginning, but they're in the ship talking to each other and she's literally telling him how uncomfortable he makes her feel, and then they're back on Naboo in a field of flowers, he's telling her he hates sand, and they're falling in love. And there's nothing in between. It's literally, you're making me uncomfortable with the shit you're saying. We're now in love. And I went back and watched it. Because I was watching it with my girlfriend and I was like, huh. I was like, that's weird. I feel like I missed a scene. Let me go back and rewatch it. There's nothing in between. It is literally, it goes from that scene to that scene. And you're like, that is the one flaw that I have with this, is that Padme has absolutely no reason to actually fall in love with Anakin. In fact, the shit he does in the movie is creepy and aggressive. And like, yes, he saves her life, right? And I understand that. But the stuff he does in the movie is creepy and it's aggressive. And like him staring at her and him saying awkward stuff to her on the ship. And then him massacring a tribe of, you know, sand people, yeah. Tusken Raiders. Like, I killed them all, the women and the children too. And she literally goes, Anakin, it's natural to be angry. It's like, well, that means one of two things. Either you consider the Tusken, you know, the sand people to be subhuman, and it's okay that your boyfriend just went and massacred a bunch of animals, which is a pretty shitty representation for Padme.
Yeah.
Or you literally don't care that he just murdered a bunch of human, you know, sentient beings, and you're okay with that because they killed his mother. It's like, I understand they killed his mother. It's fucked up. But he explicitly told you, not just the men, but the women and the children too. And you literally say, yeah. Anakin, it's natural to be angry. Like, at that point, you have to be thinking, like, hey, there's something a little off about this guy.
So, like, what I really wanted was, before that, like, some kind of dark side for Padme. Like, where was her dark side?
She tells Anakin.
Where was her willingness to go too far? That would have made me believe it, if she had been shown to have some kind of willingness to go too far for her people. And I think that probably is there in her character. You know, she hates the Trade Federation, right? Like, she's a character that has reason to hate. She's very committed to democracy, noble, but she's also a politician. So, like you know that there have to be some multiple layers, but her character just got nothing.
Well,
she was just a foil for Anakin to be Anakin.
Yeah,
and I think that's unfortunate.
She was there because Anakin needed a love interest, and she had to be that love interest. But they characterized them both a lot better in Clone Wars, the TV series, and you see that the reason why Anakin does the things that he does is because he loves so deeply that it blinds him to the things that he could do to continue that love, to hold on to that love, right? Like, the fact that he killed all those people, what they portrayed is like, well, they're a murderous group of, you know, horrible people who kidnap and rape and pillage and murder and slaughter. Like, they're terrible. They terrorize these people. He basically killed a tribe of terrorists, right? And like, that's how they kind of like hand wave it away. And then they show that like, he is so incredibly deeply attached to these people that he cares about, that it's coming from a good place, but he would do anything to protect them. And that's the part of him that gets warped, and that's the part of him that gets twisted to say, well, you care about the Republic, don't you? Wouldn't you do anything to protect the Republic? Wouldn't you do anything to protect the Senate, blah 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 blah. And like, that's how he gets, you know, that's how he becomes Darth Vader. And Darth Vader kills Anakin Skywalker, and Anakin Skywalker dies. I don't know. I think we talked about this the last episode, or maybe we talked about it another time.
We did. But
yeah, the fact that he literally believes he sacrifices himself. Darth Vader kills his personality and becomes Darth Vader. But, you know, that, thank God for the Clone Wars TV series, where they, like, elaborate on much of this, because I kid you not, I feel like, having watched the Clone Wars TV series, I appreciate the prequels more, because I can associate that characterization with the movies.
And I'm working on the Clone Wars, so I think, you know, maybe when we finish the prequel IRLs, we can do some. I think Clone Wars is gonna deserve more than one IRL if we want to really.
Oh, I do want an
spend
episode.
Spend some time on it.
We'll do one episode to one. We'll do one story arc per episode, right? And we'll just, this will just become a Clone Wars podcast. Is what it'll be.
Yeah.
I mean, have you, what season are you on right now at Clone Wars?
I'm still rewatching the first one. I've seen bits and pieces throughout, so I'm going to be able to skip ahead pretty quickly, I think.
Season 5, going to break your heart, as it does. Season 7, the end is legitimately like, it's hard to
You've
watch.
You warned me about season 5. Yeah. So.
Season 5 is particularly hard to watch. Like, I was amazed at how emotional it actually was. Shout out to Dave Filoni, the complete master. Like, but also, I started watching Rebels. I heard Rebels gets shit on online, right? And I guess it's because people don't like the animation, and they feel that, like, without the long story arcs that Clone Wars has, like, Rebels only has, like, 2-episode arcs, and they're usually one-offs. So it kind of bounces a little bit, right? And I feel like people didn't like that. I'd heard bad things about Rebels, so I never gave it a shot until I finished Clone Wars. The season two finale of Rebels, called Twilight of the Apprentice, is perhaps my favorite bit of Star Wars storytelling I've ever seen. It's truly, truly, truly incredible. So when you finish Clone Wars, I'm not going to spoil it for you, because if you don't know what Twilight of the Apprentice is, it is 100% worth watching blind for the sheer emotional impact that it will have on you, because it is beautiful. Like, Dave Filoni, I cannot put enough respect on his name for how clearly he loves the Star Wars universe and how amazingly respectful he is to it, but how much he adds to it on his own, right? Like, it is Twilight of the Apprentice. I had heard things about it and I was like, oh, you know, that sounds pretty neat. I watched it and I feel like I sat in silence for the entire hour-long duration of the two-parter. And when it was done, I just like turned the TV off. And I was like, I don't even know how I'm supposed to watch season three now. Like, it was so good. It could have ended Star Wars for me right there. And I would have been like, it's beautiful. Like, I'm done. That was perfect. It was so incredibly good. It's yeah, just don't, if you don't know anything about it now, don't look up anything about it. Just watch it on your own, blind, and enjoy it, because it is beautiful. And I don't say that like it is hyperbole. Like, it is up there with season five and season seven of Clone Wars. And in fact, I would argue that it may be better because of all the different arcs that it like ties in together. So just, this is not what we're supposed to be talking about now, and we're probably not going to make this.
So, the Galactic Republic is threatened by a separatist movement organized by former Jedi Master Count Dooku, Yoda's former Padawan, we should note, and Qui-Gon's master. So the Jedi, lines of training,
There's just an incestuous bunch over there. They just all
yeah,
train
it's
each
all
other.
over here. So what happens is former queen, now Senator Amidala, goes to Coruscant to vote on a motion that's been made to create an Grand Army of the Republic to assist the Jedi against the threat, because obviously the Jedi are peacekeepers. There's not nearly enough of them to fight a war. There's arguably not enough of them to maintain peace in the galaxy, despite them being at the literal height of their power going into this scenario. Coming in, naturally, we start off the movie with a bang as her ship is bombed. Something that you probably couldn't do in a movie, a Star Wars movie, today, but she, yeah, so she's naturally not on the ship. She's flown in one of the fighters disguised as a pilot. She escapes. She doesn't want extra protection because she's Senator Amidala and she's,
So how she lives her
a main
life.
character.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a main
She
character.
has
She
plot
knows
armor. She'll be
she's gonna
fine,
be
at least
fine.
until
Yeah.
maybe three, but.
But naturally, the caring Supreme Chancellor Palpatine, out of a deep concern for her personal welfare, insists that she be placed under the protection of Obi-Wan Kenobi and his apprentice, Anakin Skywalker. And I think this is interesting because at this point, it's clear that he has some motive in doing this. But it's unclear what that motive is. And as we, I think as we kind of watch the rest of the movie, something that I picked up on in my latest rewatch is that it was very clear that Anakin had been spending a lot of time talking to him off screen. That he considers Palpatine to be a mentor. And that Palpatine has been doing an excellent job of buttering him up. And sort of, telling him how powerful he is, how powerful he's going to be, encouraging him to challenge the teachings of the Jedi, whispering in his ear that they're holding him back, that he could do so much more, and that he's ready to be a master or whatever,
I wish they had played that relationship up more, right? Because it makes
I
so
do,
much
I
more sense.
agree.
So Anakin should have had Qui-Gon as his father figure, and he didn't because Qui-Gon was killed by Darth Maul. That's the duel of the fates and everything like that. So he looks for a father figure in Obi-Wan, but he doesn't really get it. What he gets is an older brother in Obi-Wan, right? And Obi-Wan does his best, but Obi-Wan and Anakin are often at odds, right? And they kind of show that, like, they have a good relationship. They're very brotherly towards each other, but Obi-Wan is overly protective, and, you know,
brothers fight.
Yeah, and that's what they do. But so he finds the father figure he's looking for in Sheev Palpatine. And I wish they had played that up more, because you look at in the third movie when he stops Mace Windu from killing Palpatine, and you think, like, how did he just flip the switch? How did he just become evil like that? It's like, well, imagine that someone who'd been treating you like a dick for your entire life is killing the person who you look at as your father, right? And the person you look at as your father just seemingly potentially betrayed you, but he's telling you that not only, you know, are the Jedi evil, and the Jedi are trying to overthrow the Senate, and the Jedi are trying to kill him, which they're now doing exactly that, but also he could save your wife from dying, and you know she's going to die, and he's your father figure, and this guy's been an asshole to you the whole time, and you're telling him, like, no, you can't kill him, you can't kill him, and he's going to kill him. Like, it makes a lot more sense, but the problem is you have to read so much between the lines. They, you know, I wish these movies, I mean, the movie was, what, like 2 hours and 20 minutes long? Like, shit, this could have been a 3 hour long movie, and it would have been fine. Like, it needed more of that build up between the characters, which you get in Clone Wars when you watch after it, but unfortunately it wasn't in the movie, so it kind of just seems weird. But Palpatine is basically grooming Anakin.
I think it very much requires you to listen closely to the dialogue. And like you said, to read between the lines, because I think, you know, that's certainly something that I kind of missed as a kid. And I can't say that I've rewatched Attack of the Clones that many times since then, but it was very clear to me, and I was watching this, you know, with a clear intent to kind of get an understanding of what's going on. Why are people, you know, I was watching it because I knew we were going to talk about it, and, you know, I love, my daughter loves Star Wars, and so it's something fun we can do together, so it's kind of like a, you know, let's watch this, and I'll watch the movie, I'll watch her reaction as a child now watching it, and try to temper my own adult reactions with her reactions as a 7-year-old.
How did she like it?
She loves it, dude. Yeah. Anakin straight up is, like, her favorite character of all time. And that's knowing
that he his turns, story arc. Yeah.
But she blames Palpatine. Palpatine tricked him.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Yeah.
Palpatine led him down a bad path, and he made bad choices as a result.
Anakin has the redemption, right? Like,
yeah.
Like so many characters who are originally good and turn bad, they have the redemption. I mean, Darth Maul, to a certain extent, has a redemption. You know, these are more people from the Rebels timelines, because there's a lot of people in Rebels who are, like, you know, good guys who turn bad and then get redemption. But, you know, that's a continuing theme of the Star Wars universe, is that if you are good and you turn bad, like, that good is still inside you. It just is often buried by traumatic experiences or hatred or anger or fear or something like that, or sadness, like it is for Anakin. But I could see Anakin being her favorite character, especially because in the end he does what's right, and you know, it cost him his life, but he does what's right.
Well, and a big part of it too is that her primary experience with Star Wars up to this point has been the Clone Wars TV series. She's probably watched it all the way through, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 times. So a big part of it, I think, comes from that. Now, I don't know if she's seen season 7. I think that probably came out after we stopped having Netflix, and she hasn't really watched a lot of it since last year. But anyway.
Where's our so
we were talking about
Padme's ship gets blown up, and then
naturally, despite her protestations that she'll be fine, somebody tries to kill her again with some freaky little alien bugs.
Mm-hmm. Are seemingly really smart for alien bugs. Like, they know to pause.
They're super smart.
R2-D2 is scanning the room.
It's the future.
Yeah. The bugs are smarter up there.
Yeah.
But isn't it a long time ago? Is it the past? The far distant past?
It's the more advanced past. Which, you know, whether he knew it or not, honestly makes total sense. Like, you know, if there were going to be an advanced civilization, it was probably a really long time ago that it happened. For us, from our perspective, scientifically. Anyways, sorry, we're also watching Cosmos, so...
We don't need to try to justify anything in the Star Wars universe. They don't try to justify it, we don't need to either.
So, we use...
Except for lightspeed skipping, and using a ship in lightspeed to destroy something else. Those things, yes. I feel like, need to be justified to a certain extent.
So, Anakin uses his space magic to detect the alien bugs, and kill them with his lightsaber, what I can only describe as arguably the most dangerous
move with a lightsaber
that I've seen anyone do. Let me jump into someone's bed and swing a lightsaber.
Yeah, what if she'd been startled and sat up? It would have just chopped her head off.
Well, I guess the force apparently guided his actions. He's the chosen one for a reason. He can jump into someone's bed without killing them. He's gonna jump into her bed again later on, so it's a little foreshadowing for you.
Yeah.
Doesn't
work out well for anyone, but...
Nope. So, Obi-Wan, being the rule-following, by-the-book Jedi that he is, promptly jumps out the window and grabs the droid. And it flies him through rush hour traffic. Anakin steals somebody's speeder. Or commandeers, since he probably has legal authority.
Yeah.
It takes him a second, though, because he has to find one that's fast enough.
Yeah. So, I love everything about this entire scene. I love literally the whole thing from start to finish. I love the banter they have back and forth. I love how, like, witty they are with each other. I love them walking to the bar and saying, you know, official Jedi business, go back to your drinks.
Yeah.
Like, I just love everything about this entire scene. It is truly, to me, like, one of my favorite scenes in Star Wars.
It's so I enjoyed it. I felt that it went on longer than I would have liked. I would have liked them to take, and that's true actually of a lot of the action scenes in this movie. They really went hard on the special effects, which was cool. But I would have liked them to take some of that time and spend it doing some more character development. I feel like if we could have gotten, like, another 10 minutes of character development in here, we might have had a better movie overall. Because I don't think it really would have needed that much. A couple of scenes here and there to add some depth,
so
I think, would have gone a long way.
That you're going to remove the part where Anakin jumps out of the speeder, falls through the sky, lands on top of the other speeder, loses his lightsaber, and Obi-Wan catches it? Or the scene where he says it's a shortcut and it's not a shortcut. I mean, that whole thing is just gold.
I would have cut the shortcut. But
I just love how...
Because that's just so cliche. Like, I don't
just
know.
Cracks,
like...
It just cracks me up. Oh, he went completely the other way and then Anakin just jumps out of here. I just love that scene. I know it's cliche and I understand it's cliche. But I love that scene.
Yeah.
I feel like that was character building. I feel like that was character building between Obi-Wan and Anakin. To show you the type of relationship that they have, where it's semi-antagonistic, but at the same time incredibly supportive, right? Like, I feel like it was that.
And it didn't have... we didn't need to take all the time out of that scene. There's a lot of action scenes in this movie. I don't know.
That's fair.
It's a fast-paced movie. There's a lot going on. Anyway... Let's get back on track.
Like, this entire act of the movie I really enjoy, because they follow this up with Obi-Wan doing his, like, detective thing, where he goes down to a diner and he talks to a guy and he goes to research it and he can't find it. He talks to Yoda and then he goes to Kamina. Like, I love everything about that too. I like Detective Obi-Wan, you know, trying to figure something out and then trying to find it and going to a planet that nobody else knows that it's even there and it's been erased from the records and why, and it brings up all these questions. Like, I really like that. I like that a lot too. So I felt like we had a good scene with Anakin and then a good scene with Obi-Wan.
We did. I had a lot of questions about the economy of the planet Kamino that probably aren't relevant to this podcast, but I was just like, no one knows where they are, and yet it's clearly like people have heard of them, because this guy on Coruscant, this random bartender on Coruscant, has heard of them. So clearly they're like known on the black market, but they can't be selling armies of clones to everyone. So what are they doing for money in the meantime? Like, I guess maybe they're just selling clones piecemeal here and there, I guess.
I mean, I think probably. I think they probably mostly built clones for slaves, if I had to guess, right? So they were probably associated with the slavers.
That seems reasonable.
What are the cat people species? The zup something. They're not cats. They're I don't know. It's from Clone Wars, but they're like slavers, right? So I have to bet that they probably had something to do with the slave trade, and I have to bet that like the Jedi don't know about every planet that exists. They only really know about the planets that are part of the Republic, and that they have a presence on, right?
Yeah.
And they didn't have a presence on Kamino, and Kamino wasn't part of the Republic until after they started selling them clones. So, you know, they would have no reason to go there. There wasn't any war breaking out on it. There wasn't any need to keep the peace. Like, you know, it is weird because we look at it like, oh, well, we've only seen like 12 planets, right? So it's like, how do you not know that there's a fucking planet? But they said that the Republic is what, like 1,500 star systems or something like that? Like, the fact that you wouldn't know about one single small planet that happens to have a really niche, you know,
it's fair.
Industry is not unbelievable, I feel like.
No, it's not. I guess part of me just felt like it almost opened more questions than it closed. But they needed an army of clones.
And also, what if it was like this? They talked
about the Clone Wars.
So what if it was the original Jedi whose name is escaping me now, which the guy who went there first and ordered the army of clones and then
Cypher Diaz?
Yeah, Cypher Diaz. So what if Jedi Master Cypher Diaz heard about this thing from someone else, went there, discovered it from Darth Aranis, obviously, went there, discovered it, came back and then erased it out of the archives just to make sure that nobody else found out about it.
So there was some, and I think I've got to actually rewatch this part. But there was some confusing stuff going on there where I wasn't entirely clear if they thought that it was this Master Cypher Diaz who had placed this order, or if they were confused because they thought that Cypher Diaz had been dead before the order was placed. There was some confusing lines of dialogue there I wasn't clear.
They weren't sure on when he placed the order. It comes to light in the Clone Wars TV series that he placed the order and then was killed after that. But they didn't know he placed the order, right? So when they heard he placed the order 10 years ago, they were like, oh, that's weird, he died 10 years ago. How is that possible? So they weren't sure of the timeline, which is probably why there's confusion in the movie.
Yeah, there's some real confusing dialogue there going on.
Yes, so he's manipulated by Darth Tyranus and Count Dooku. He's manipulated before Count Dooku comes out as evil. He's manipulated into believing that the Republic is in danger. And he was more of like a gray Jedi like Qui-Gon. So he doesn't believe that the Jedi are completely all good. So he's manipulated into this paranoia to start this army to plant the seeds for it. And then, of course, Darth Tyranus ends up, you know, basically arranging to have him killed or, you know, have him killed on a mission that he had to go on normally for Jedi. So it seems like he just dies in the line of duty. But, of course, it's because he has to be silent so that nobody can know about this order that's going on.
Well, so the best part of this all for me is that we've got a bit of a rogue Mandalorian who's used as the template, which is why the clone troopers are all such complete badasses. But I call him a rogue Mandalorian because he takes his helmet off like all the time. So he clearly just gives no shits about the rules. Which is fine. Like, you know, he's a bounty hunter. He clearly does his own thing. I guess I just found that really interesting.
Yeah, he's I'm not sure how much of a Mandalorian he actually is. I mean, we've seen instances in other media of people just kind of wearing Mandalorian armor and being you know, I'm a Mandalorian, or like, you know, just trying to throw people off the scent, like, oh yeah, sure, I'm a Mandalorian, right? So I don't know how much he is, because you're right, he doesn't seem very Mandalorian-y. Now seeing what we know about the Mandalorians from later media, outside of his fighting technique and his reliance on technology.
Yeah, he's got all the gadgets that the Mandalorians use, which leads me to believe that either he was a Mandalorian and he broke ways for some reason, or he's just a hardcore killer and took it by force.
Yeah.
And either way, you know, he lives up to the Fett name. He, you know, in a way, I guess he technically founded the Fett name, right? But although Boba's his more famous son, perhaps.
Yeah.
despite getting less screen time.
Yeah, despite having 10 minutes of screen time over three movies and dying embarrassingly. Although he doesn't die, I think. In Legends, at least, he climbs out of the Sarlacc pit and survives. But yeah, they had some really good Boba stuff. We're going to talk about the Clone Wars again. I'm sorry for this. They had some really good Boba stuff in the Clone Wars where it shows him growing up and like on his path to seeking revenge. And unfortunately, they had a story arc planned out for him in the last season of Clone Wars, and they didn't get to do it. They made him pick three story arcs. I think they had eight left, and they made him pick three. And unfortunately, they didn't get to do the Boba one, which is very disappointing, because I think Boba and Cad Bane, who is one of the other bounty hunters, were like really, really, really good in Clone Wars. I didn't get to see him. But regardless, so... You know, Boba's there. Boba's an unmodified clone, so he doesn't grow twice as fast, and he doesn't have the inhibitor chip in him. So he is basically given to Jango as his son, which everybody knows, and then he gets to watch Jango beat up on Obi-Wan for a little bit. This is the one thing that bothered me is like it shows Jango is a very, very accomplished fighter, and then like in the end. On the battle on Geonosis, he just gets like killed real fast by Mace Windu. And I know Mace Windu is like super talented Jedi, like one of the strongest Jedi of all time. But come on, man, he just like swings his lightsaber at him and kills him. He like doesn't do anything truly impressive.
I mean, I guess what it says to me is the difference in level of lightsaber proficiency between Obi-Wan and Mace Windu. Although Jango does at least put Mace back on his heels briefly at the beginning of that fight, and then Mace quickly takes the upper hand and wastes no time, which is I think part of Obi-Wan's problem is that he wanted Jango alive.
Yeah.
And Mace was just like, nah.
Mace just says, "No, you're gonna die." You get the head cut off, the head flies out of the helmet, your little son watches you die, picks up your empty helmet, which fortunately for him no longer has your head inside of it anymore. So, yeah, it was brutal. But the long story short is that that's the fun part of the movie. Then comes the slightly less fun part of the movie where Anakin goes back to Tatooine to try to find his mother because he's been having weird dreams about her being in pain. He meets his, I guess... stepdad Kleeg Lars, which is kind of cool because then you get to meet a young Uncle Owen, right, which is pretty neat, and then he basically goes out, finds his mother, she's dies in his arms, which is horrible, and then he just slaughters an entire tribe of are they sand people or are they Tusken Raiders, is
same thing,
yeah, okay, so he slaughters an entire tribe of them. Padme consoles him, tells him it's completely okay to have killed an entire tribe of sentient beings. And
I guess I should qualify that. The Sand People is the species, I believe. Like, the specific race, and the Tusken Raiders is, like, specific groups of them that exist to... Like, their way of existing is to raid the various aliens that have foolishly decided to live.
Yeah.
And well, because they have the big... what are they called? The big animals, the banthas,
yeah,
which have tusks, and they wear like the helmets that kind of have like the tusk motif, so they're the Tusken Raiders. Later they sold the team and they became the Mos Eisley Raiders, but that's a whole other story.
Ew, that's terrible. Although this is pretty clever, I'll give you that. That's not bad. All
right. So anyway, Anakin murders a tribe, and that makes Padme fall in love with him.
Slaughters the entire team. They're unable to play the following season due to being dead. But yes. Then they go to Geonosis, right? Because Obi-Wan goes to Geonosis. Basically gets captured by Count Dooku. He transmits his findings before that. The Jedi are too far away, so Anakin disobeys orders to go to try to save him. Jar Jar, during this time... gives emergency powers to Palpatine, which enables the rise of the Empire. But, so Anakin and Padme try to rescue
Obi-Wan. Darth Jar Jar at work.
Yeah, Anakin and Padme try to rescue Obi-Wan. They fail pretty miserably. Which leads to another one of my really enjoyable scenes, which is like the gladiator scene when they're all chained to the post in the arena, and they keep themselves alive for just long enough for the clones to show up with all of the Jedi. All the Jedi show up first. The Jedi put up a good fight, but are outnumbered in the end and surrounded, and then the clones show up with Yoda and they save the day. A lot of Jedi died in that battle. And it really brings to light the fact that not all of the Jedi are tremendously good at what they do. Some of the Jedi just kind of suck, and they get killed really easily by battle droids, which are like laughably inefficient. So that's kind of interesting.
I think it also brings to light the like the justification for the Republic needing an army, that at a certain point, quantity of soldiers overrides quality of soldiers. And the battle droids are basically that point, right? They're incredibly cheap, they mass produce them, and they don't care what happens to them. They can throw 100,000 battle droids at somebody, and it's like, whatever. If they all die, or they don't die, they all get blown up, like, whatever. We've got 100,000 more in the wings. I think it very much draws that line that, like, the Jedi, for all their power, are still small in number. There's what we could guess. There's maybe a 100, 200 of them that show up there. There's probably a lot more spread throughout the galaxy, but it's something
I
like
think there
that.
are. I think there's supposed to be several thousand during this period of time, but they are spread throughout the galaxy, right? Like those are the ones that were at the temple that could travel to Geonosis. And I mean, it is interesting. Probably one of my biggest issues with these movies, and they did it in Revenge of the Sith as well, but the Jedi who are the focus get incredibly intricate, long, drawn-out lightsaber duels that showcase their skill. The Jedi who are not the focus swing their blades once or twice and die. And I understand it's trying to set a differentiation between like Anakin and Obi-Wan and Yoda and Mace Windu, who are supposed to be like the most talented Jedi of all time, and all the rest of the Jedi. But I would have at least liked to have seen some of the Jedi like Kit Fisto and like the guys who get killed by Palpatine, right? Like Palpatine kills Kit Fisto, who's the like amphibian Jedi with like the green, dreads, I hesitate to call them, but he's like Jamaican in the Clone Wars, so it's, whatever. But, like Mace Windu kills Jango Fett with like a single switch of like the lightsaber blade, right? And Jango doesn't put up a ton of a fight. And like that's disappointing because it's like Jango's supposed to be this super badass. You just saw him fight Obi-Wan really, really well. And like Mace Windu barely does anything. Palpatine kills Kit Fisto and two other Jedi with like two swings of the lightsaber, and they didn't even seem like they were particularly fast swings. Like I would have just liked to have seen these characters that are supposedly very powerful put up slightly more of a fight. And if they get killed some ridiculous way, then fine, so be it. But to just have someone swing a lightsaber and kill this character that's supposed to be incredibly good at what they do, that always takes me out a little bit of like the
Yeah,
immersion.
that's fair. I've got to think that it's a little bit, I mean, it's got to be a little bit difficult when you're trying to get Ian McDiarmid to do acrobatics. It
I mean,
makes
he does that screaming spinning thing where he
yeah.
like jumps over the thing and like spins. They could have done it if they really wanted, but they had to save that for when he fought Yoda. I understand, right? That's all the CGI budget went there.
Yeah, there's limits to even their budget. So where are we at here? Anakin swears that he will find a way to prevent the deaths of those he loves. That's not concerning or foreshadowing anything.
Anakin fights Dooku, massively fucks it up, doesn't listen to Obi-Wan at all, gets his hand cut off like really easily, which is pretty tremendous.
Dooku just sort of laughs them off and easily dispatches them. Yoda shows up and fights him to a standstill, apparently holding back a little bit. Dooku realizes that he's outmatched. Not sure why he didn't catch on when Yoda literally caught Force Lightning in his hand and turned it off. Probably that should have been a sign that it was time to go, but he insisted on a lightsaber duel, which arguably Yoda was winning. So Dooku did the standard villain trick of, let me threaten your friends with instant death while I run away. It worked. Yoda apparently can't grab a starship out of the sky if it's got its engines turned on.
Sadly. I mean, Yoda has this thing where he holds back a lot when he really doesn't need to. And he could have just gone ham and killed Dooku, and then this war would have been over and everything would have been fine. But Yoda's a pacifist at heart, apparently.
He is.
And he never uses more force than he has to fight his enemies to a stalemate, as he did with Palpatine as well, so...
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Yoda really is at fault for everything that happened after this point.
I think he knows he's at fault, too. That's why he goes into exile.
That's probably true.
I mean, he's embarrassed.
Yeah.
Right? He knows that the Jedi were arrogant, and their short-sightedness allowed the Sith to grow right under their nose. And
I mean, in his defense, he's like 880 at this point in the series, so he's probably a little senile. And really should not have been in charge of the Jedi Council, if you want to look at it that way. Like, when he trains Luke, he's literally, like, about to die. That entire time. He's got less than 1% of his life left the first time Luke meets him.
Which is crazy, because he's, like, 1,000 years old, so what are the chances that he's just about to die when Luke meets him? But he was staying alive. What really has been an interesting time to me is, like, the idea that there were Jedi in hiding. Like, we watched the original series, and you get the idea that the only Jedi left alive are Obi-Wan and Yoda, and now Luke. And, like, that's it. They're all dead, because they're so spread throughout the galaxy. But as you read more into the other extended universe stories, you realize, like, they weren't the only Jedi, right? Like, just, unfortunately, they needed something to bring them together, and it ended up being Luke. But, like, they weren't the only Jedi. There were other Jedi out there. They were just spread all the way across the universe. And, like, it's crazy when you think about how young Obi-Wan is and how much time he spends in... I mean, it's 20 years that he spends in exile on Tatooine, pretty much.
Yeah. Also, he can essentially just kind of keep an eye on Luke.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is what the new series is going to be, the new Obi-Wan series, is going to be him, like... on Tatooine during those years, which is something that I'm incredibly stoked to learn about. I think that'll be a really fun time.
Because
that'll be like concurrent to Rebels, basically.
I had not heard about that, but that does sound awesome. So that's something to look forward to. Takeaways from this movie for me. One of the other things we kind of catch on at the end is that the Geonosians, I'm not sure what to call them. Are the ones who designed...
Geonosians.
Yeah, I was thinking it was Geonosians. Are the ones who designed the Death Star. So Dooku takes their super weapon plans for safekeeping. You can't see the air quotes, but they're there.
Right. They are there.
And he brings them to his master, Darth Sidious. And that's sort of like, I think that was a great bit of foreshadowing. Like, we never really, you know, got a whole lot of info on, you know, the sort of the origins of the Death Star. Like, who came up with this insane plan to build a moon-sized space station that can blow up planets? These guys, apparently.
Geonosians. So, in the first couple seasons of Clone Wars, and you've probably watched this already, the Geonosians are featured, like, a lot, right? Have you watched the episode yet with, like, the parasites that get into people and brain control them? It's like they did, like, a horror episode of Clone Wars.
I think I've...
Like, all these clones get stuck underground.
I haven't rewatched it, but I think I've seen it.
It's fantastic. So there's these parasites that basically have the ability to possess dead Geonosians and, like, bring them back to life as zombies, which are incredibly hard to kill. And they get into some of the clones, and they, like, infect the clones, too. And so there's, like, a horror episode arc of all these clones stuck underground trying to escape because they have no idea what it is that's, like, killing them. And there's all these... It's crazy. It's a good arc. I really enjoy it.
I'm looking forward to it.
Clone Wars. But, God, man, I want to talk about Clone Wars so bad. I'll talk about Clone Wars so bad. So good.
And so...
You know what?
So Yoda acknowledges that the Clone Wars begun have... Anakin gets his robot hand and marries Padme in secret with droids for witnesses, which I'm not sure is legal. But yeah,
nothing that they did is legal.
And we're still left to wonder what it is she sees in him. I guess
she sees his beautiful heart.
I guess so.
Okay, gotcha. That's what it is.
Yeah,
filled with murder and rage.
He's kind of just an anger sandwich, is what he is. You know, the anger is the bread, though. It's on both mm-hmm. sides.
And inside is is more anger and jealousy, loathing. But there's like a slice of like happiness.
I was gonna say there's some love there in the middle. Like he wants to do good. He wants to. He just like wants it so bad that he's unwilling to do things the right way. Yeah.
That he'll kill anyone to get it. I want to do good, but you know if I can't do good, by God, I'll murder anyone who stands in my way.
Well, you know, it's like they have the little political disagreement where she doesn't really take him seriously. But he's like, you know, democracy doesn't work. Like we need, you know. We need a system where people sit down, talk about a problem, choose the solution, and then do it. And she's like, well, that's democracy. And he's like, well, sometimes they don't do it, and they need someone to make them. And then I'm like, okay, this just makes me feel like they should not be together.
So a dictatorship. Yeah. All right, well, it is 107. I'm down to call it. I'm down to say that we are... We are now done with this episode. Thank you guys so much for tuning in for the In Real Life podcast. And unfortunately, I think my internet has actually died right now. So I'm going to have to call it a night.
All right. Well, Mercury's internet has dropped. So that, I think, brings us to the logical end of our Attack of the Clones IRL. All right. Peace.